time to welcome back to the programme the one and only Hong Kong visa geezer, Stephen J. Arthur Barnes. How are you?
Hello, Phil.
Good to see you. Hey, if you've got any questions about your visa status, if you've just moved here, well, you explain your shtick, because then people can email in anything they like.
Yeah, if you find yourself with any kind of immigration question, we've invested quite a lot of time, effort and energy in a web presence, which is on my blog and elsewhere, hongkongvisageezer.com.
Yep.
And you're welcome to ask me questions via the blog, and I'll give you a podcast answer for free within 48 hours.
Okay, then, well, basically, it's if you've just moved here, sometimes people come as couples or married or maybe even. And a real common one, Steve, is that, oh, my wife doesn't know how to get her stuff sorted, da-da-da, isn't it?
The dependent visas, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, of course, when you are coming to Hong Kong with your family, including your spouse, you've got to get immigration status just for yourself, whether you're going to work or join in a business or something along those lines. And your accompanying family members need visas to be with you, and that is a dependent visa.
And it involves paperwork and...
Well, that's the same everywhere, isn't it? Yeah, so it's not that difficult, actually. I mean, you just have to show, if you're going to get a dependent visa, that you're in a genuine relationship, you're legally married, that the sponsor can put a roof over the head of the dependent and food on the table of the dependent. And on the basis all that stacks up, seven weeks later, Immigration Department grant you the visa, get the limit of stay that's equal to the same as the sponsor, and family reunion accomplished.
And away you go, bish, bash, bosh. Right, I want to get into something slightly more applied, if you like. The whole idea, people seem to be living more in Shenzhen these days for various reasons. But obviously they want to work and do their business in Hong Kong.
Right. And then the question is, how do you go about doing that? Well, there are a couple of issues, really. There's the immigration status that you need to take up your business in Hong Kong.
Yeah.
And the immigration status that you'll need to actually reside in China. And because we're two separate immigration jurisdictions, it's two separate challenges that you need to face.
Yeah.
And getting immigration status for Hong Kong by itself, if you are setting up your own business here, is challenging enough. But then seeking to sort of live in China and go through whatever the processes are there, because I don't really know that much at all about Chinese immigration.
As I say, it's either going to be ridiculously hard or a piece of cake.
Well, to the best of my knowledge, historically it hasn't been hard. But
okay.
July last year, there was a complete overhaul of Chinese immigration law, and the Chinese authorities have come down like you can't believe and make it that much more difficult these days.
Wonder why.
Control. It's always about control at the end of the day.
Control.
Yeah, it's always about control.
I thought it might be somebody's done something to tick them off, and they're slapping some other jurisdiction on the wrist.
Goodness knows. I mean, it just seems kind of coincidental to me that with an increased focus and emphasis on corruption at the highest levels throughout China,
sure.
It would be a natural sort of area of social activity in China to have a look at, right? Because the foreign community are... they're guests or temporary residents, and in a sense they're the easier group to control.
All right.
Because you either get your status or you don't, or if they give it to you, they can limit it.
Yeah.
To get back to the question, you can, if you wish, seek to establish or join in a business in Hong Kong, and then subsequently, if you find that you prefer to spend your time living in China, if you can navigate the labyrinth of Chinese immigration, you can potentially do it that way. But there's still always a wrinkle to that scenario. A, because you've got to commute across the boundary every single day, and who the heck would want to do that on an ongoing basis? People do, but I get a nosebleed just even thinking about it, to be honest.
Yeah.
And then there's the issue of being able to satisfy the immigration department that the residence visa that you get to join in that business anticipates that you're going to reside as well as work. So if your intention is just merely to work but yet to reside in China, it may be that the spirit of the investment visa, which is the visa you get in this situation would be defeated by the fact that you want to live in one place but work in
it's
another.
It's complicated but doable. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
And good luck to you.
It's how you tell the story and how you carry the argument. It's, you know, it's not something I see every day, but I was asked a question about it recently, and it's a perfectly reasonable sort of way of thinking about orienting yourself in relation to this part of the world, but
yeah.
It's certainly not something that that I would anticipate doing myself.
The only thing I can imagine is if somebody was, working in Shenzhen, living in each end, and then they decided they wanted to do this, it would cost them $1 squillion because they'd be wanting to register a business in Hong Kong.
Now that I see quite a lot, actually. Okay. And tying that back to the change in immigration arrangements in China as of July last year,
yeah.
A lot of, let's say, grey zone foreigners in China that had started their own businesses there and perhaps didn't have the right immigration status have found it increasingly difficult to get to extensions or renewal of their business visas there,
yeah.
Which are always intended to be temporary in any event, and just to go on visit for business purposes, not really to establish or join in your own business there. So because of the tightening up of the process,
yeah.
Naturally a lot of these foreign nationals are now looking to Hong Kong thinking, well, perhaps I can do better in Hong Kong than I've been able to do in China. And I've had two or three cases actually in that time where we've been able to successfully adjust the immigration permissions for such temporary residents in China to come and take up lawful residents here. And
so you've basically been able to swung it in a way. It's worked out, basically.
Yeah, but only because, you know, the individual applicants have qualified for the requisite status in Hong Kong in the first place.
I've got a question here from Lily, and she emails in. We're talking about PR, right? Permanent residency. Can the wife get it after 7 years, even though she doesn't work? Is it only for the people who've paid tax or for anyone who's lived here for 7 years?
Yeah, the test for approval for the right of abode is you need to show that you've been continuously and ordinarily resident here for a period of not less than 7 years, and any absences from Hong Kong in that time have been of a merely temporary nature, as evidenced by what you leave behind to return back to at the end of each temporary stay abroad. Now, that's a mouthful, but it encompasses everything that you need to address in order to be qualified for the right of abode. Now, in establishing your credentials for PR, there are certain documents that you usually submit to the Immigration Department to evidence that and also prove that you have been settled in Hong Kong all throughout.
So a holiday here and there won't, you know...
None of that's an issue, but the question is, can you get PR if you've been a dependent and never worked, and therefore you're not in a position to submit copies of tax returns?
Gotcha.
Well, you would never have those tax returns in the first place. So, in a sense, that's self-evident. And the Immigration Department will look at your movements in and out of Hong Kong throughout all that time, and they'll be able to understand from the pattern of your life where you've been living with your family members and the kind of immigration status that you've had and what's reasonably expectable for you to be able to produce to show that you can pass that test and that you are settled in Hong Kong. So, no, in that instance, if you don't have tax returns, it's not an issue.
Yeah, the word that you use, that's the operational word, seems to be ordinarily,
mm-hmm.
meaning if you look kosher, you'll be all right.
You could put it that way, but I think there's 120 years of British case law defining what
represents
another resident.
I understand that, but I mean, the point here is, you know, here's me, here's Lady X, you know, I'm married to a bloke, or vice versa, and he wants to get a PR, and I haven't worked, can I?
Yeah. No, in that instance, you're absolutely right. But you know, you could take ordinarily to another extreme. You could say, well, actually, all my family live here, but I've spent the last 5 years of my life being formally educated in the UK.
Okay.
So I've gone from undergraduate to master's to a PhD, and I've commuted backwards and forwards. Well, yeah,
yes.
That's true. And I've commuted backwards and forwards between, say, the UK and Hong Kong, where all my family have been resident. I've maintained my dependent visa status in Hong Kong throughout all of that time.
Mm.
But, you know, let's say 80% of my life has been spent away from Hong Kong. In that case, can it be said or argued that I've been ordinarily resident in Hong Kong? And the answer is, in this instance, surprisingly, yes.
Because you're doing the good thing, you're doing the right thing, you know.
Because every absence that you made was of a temporary nature, as evidenced by what you left behind to return back to.
All right. See, this is one of the key questions that we tend to get asked quite a lot, in some shape or form, don't we? And these things can be very worrying to people.
Yeah, and a lot of it's kind of interesting, because if you have been here, you know, cookie cutter, 7 years, working for either a third-party employer or your own business, and it's really clear on all the facts. You know, your kids were in school, you know, you've been living with your wife, her presence, for example, has been just as prominent as yours has throughout all of this time. That's cookie cutter, and you're on your way to approval with barely being, you know, a bat of an eyelid. However, you know, a lot of people don't have that kind of really relatively straightforward experience, and so, you know, they could have left temporarily for 9 months or 12 months on a temporary secondment to, say, Singapore, in pursuit of their Hong Kong employer wealth. Yeah, but you know, I cite Singapore as an example, of course.
Yeah.
But you know, you could you could have maintained your Hong Kong employment throughout all of that time, and indeed your employment visa.
Yeah.
But you would have spent almost a year, say, in Singapore working. Query, you know, has that broken your continuity of ordinary residence? So that's just one example of the kind of facts that present themselves in people's lives that lead them to believe that they perhaps need, you know, some professional assistance or some advice to help them navigate that process.
Do you happen to know anything, just for interest, of the Singapore scene on this one?
Yeah.
I mean, do you know much about, because I'm just basically saying, is it much more of a nightmare than Hong Kong?
The one thing that characterises Singaporean immigration, as I understand it, because I really don't know that much about it, is that there are certain programmes, and these programmes tend to bend and shape according to political momentum.
Okay.
And so I think, I don't know whether it's still the case, but at one point in time you could actually apply for permanent residency right from the very get-go, which is different from Hong Kong, where you need to have 7 years of ordinary residency.
Yeah, but it costs
first.
You, doesn't it?
Well, I mean, that's another question again. I could wax lyrical for hours about how much the cost of using other countries' immigration services are compared to
ours. No, I mean,
don't
you have to bung up a bond in Singapore?
I'm not sure. It may well be the case. But my understanding in relation to that program, if it still exists in that guise, was that you needed to show that you were exceptionally well-qualified professional and that you were going to add a lot of value to Singapore. But I always found it a bit ironic. Same in Australia in many regards.
They're pretty tough.
Yeah, I mean, it's the idea of sort of, you know, deciding before you've ever lived in a country that you want to go there permanently and applying directly for permanent residency. You can do that in the US. I believe you can do it in the US. You can do it in, you can certainly do it in Canada. You can do it in Australia. You can do it in New Zealand. You used to be able to do it in New Zealand. Don't think you can do it in KL, in Malaysia. You certainly can't do it here. And I get lots of questions saying, hey, I'm from Bangladesh and I would like to become a permanent resident of Hong Kong. Can you tell me which forms I need to fill in?
And a little story for you. Many years ago, I went to work in Australia and I got a residency and everything. You know,
where was this?
I was playing in an orchestra. I thought I was going to stay. Right. It was a brilliant place, by the way.
Where was city?
Just Melbourne and Brisbane.
Okay.
And the thing was, I got this residence, that's it.
Yeah.
So I get there, I think, well, I've got a job, better see if I can get a credit card. Got zip all money in my bank account, right? So I go for a credit card. They're like, no, you can't have one because you haven't got any money in your account. And I replied to them, wrote a letter, and I said, yeah, the thing is, I spent it all getting a visa into your blooming country. And do you know what? They said, oh, okay, then.
You got the key. Wow, that's bizarre. I never heard of that.
I mean, that
like
flexibility,
that
I'm wondering, you know, that was fun. Yeah. You just want to say good on you, mate.
Yeah. Kudos to you.
Go to the Aussies. Anyway, Lily, I hope that helped you. It's seemingly a simple question, but if his answer worked, it's probably making you a lot happier than you were before.
Don't worry about it. If you have any issues, just ask me via the blog and I'll podcast an answer for you.
Nice one. Anyway, you're off on your travels tomorrow. Tell us what's going on.
Yeah, I'm joining the InvestHK roadshow to Israel.
Well, flying
for Hong Kong Inc. Good stuff, yeah.
What's happening there, then?
Well, there's a big technology conference going on in Israel, in Tel Aviv, and InvestHK and the Israeli government have made a determination to try and sort of, you know, boost ties between each other, countries at the commercial level.
Yep.
And so I think there's about 30 delegates that are all heading off to InvestHK.
Amazing food.
I spent 2 years in Israel when I was younger, actually, so I know the country quite well, so I'm really looking forward to it.
Excellent. I bet you are. And you're just going to be like porking out on some of the best food in the world.
It's only some of the healthiest food.
Healthiest food, absolutely.
Yeah.
All right, Steve. Well, thanks so much for coming. And how long are you gone for?
About a week or so.
All right, well, I'll see you in a couple of weeks' time. Take care for now.